Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Case Against Socialism is a political nonfiction book by U.S. Senator Rand Paul that presents a libertarian critique of socialism and a defense of free market capitalism. Framed as a warning about the growing appeal of socialist ideas in American politics, the book argues that government expansion, centralized planning, and redistributive policy weaken individual liberty rather than protect it. Paul uses the book to challenge the policy agenda associated with figures such as Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, especially around Medicare for All, student loan forgiveness, and broader federal intervention in economic life. The book also draws on historical examples from communist and socialist regimes to argue that socialism repeatedly produces scarcity, coercion, and political repression. At the same time, it seeks to persuade readers that constitutional limits, voluntary exchange, and market competition are the foundations of prosperity and freedom. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, socialism as a threat to individual liberty, not a path to freedom. A central claim of the book is that socialism promises fairness and security while actually reducing personal freedom. Paul argues that when the state takes control of major economic decisions, citizens become more dependent on government and less able to direct their own lives. In his view, economic liberty is not separate from civil liberty. Once government controls more of the economy, it gains leverage over individual behavior, choices, and incentives. This is why the book treats socialism as a political problem, not just an economic one. The argument is designed to reverse the common association between socialism and moral progress by showing that expanded state power can undermine autonomy even when it is justified in the language of compassion. The result is a consistent libertarian framework in which freedom is measured by the space left for voluntary action, private ownership, and limited government interference. Secondly, historical examples of socialist failure are used as the book's main evidence, rather than relying only on theory. The book draws heavily on historical examples to show what Paul sees as socialism's recurring pattern of failure. The discussion references Stalinist repression and the famine and collapse associated with Venezuela, using them to illustrate how centralized systems can generate both material deprivation and political violence. These examples are not presented as isolated accidents, but as evidence of a structural tendency in socialist systems when the state controls production and distribution, shortages, coercion, and corruption become more likely. This historical framing matters because it allows Paul to argue that socialism should not be judged by its intentions alone. The book insists that a policy model must be evaluated by its consequences over time, especially where human rights, food supply, and public order are involved. In that sense, the historical material functions as the book's warning system, showing readers what can happen when idealistic theory is translated into state power. Thirdly, a direct critique of progressive policy agendas in contemporary American politics. The book is also a response to modern American left-wing politics, especially the popularity of socialist language among younger voters and national figures. Paul targets proposals such as Medicare for All and student loan forgiveness as examples of policies that expand the role of government in ways he sees as economically distortive and politically dangerous. His concern is not only the cost of these programs, but the precedent they set once the federal government assumes responsibility for more areas of life. The public may become more tolerant of dependency and less skeptical of centralized authority. The book uses this contemporary focus to make socialism feel immediate rather than historical. By linking abstract ideology to recognizable policy debates, Paul turns the book into a critique of current legislative direction in the United States. This makes the argument especially relevant to readers trying to understand how broader ideological battles shape practical decisions about taxes, spending, welfare, and regulation. Fourthly, free markets are presented as the institutional foundation of prosperity and opportunity against socialism. The book defends capitalism as the system most compatible with liberty and broad-based prosperity. Paul argues that voluntary exchange, private enterprise, and competition create incentives for innovation, efficiency, and social mobility in ways central planning cannot match. The book presents the market not as a perfect mechanism, but as a better one, because it allows individuals to make choices, bear responsibility, and respond flexibly to changing circumstances. This section of the argument is important because the book is not simply anti-socialist. It is pro-market in a principled sense. Paul links economic freedom to constitutional government, suggesting that a restrained state is necessary for entrepreneurship and wealth creation. The larger implication is that prosperity is not treated as a separate goal from freedom. Instead, the book argues that economic opportunity grows strongest when government protects property, enforces rules, and then largely stays out of the way of voluntary activity. Lastly, the book presents socialism as a political path toward authoritarianism. One of the book's most significant ideas is that socialism does not remain purely economic for long. Paul argues that when the state is responsible for allocating resources, enforcing priorities, and managing scarcity, it inevitably requires more surveillance, more bureaucracy, and more coercion. This is why the chapter often highlighted in reviews, "Socialism Becomes Authoritarianism," is so central to the book's structure. The argument is that concentrated economic control tends to spill over into broader political control because a government cannot command economic outcomes without limiting dissent and choice. This theme gives the book its sharper warning: the danger of socialism is not only inefficiency, but the erosion of open society. By connecting planning with coercion, Paul presents authoritarianism as a predictable outcome rather than an accidental corruption. The practical lesson is that readers should treat expanding state power with caution, because economic centralization can create the conditions for political domination. In conclusion, the case against socialism will appeal most to readers interested in political philosophy, economic policy, constitutional government, and the contemporary debate over socialism in the United States. It is especially relevant for libertarian and conservative readers. But it can also interest anyone trying to understand the ideological arguments behind current disputes over healthcare, student debt, welfare, and federal spending. Its main practical value is that it offers a clear, accessible summary of the anti-socialist case from a prominent political figure, using historical examples and policy commentary to make the argument concrete. Intellectually, it stands out because it does not treat socialism as a neutral policy alternative. It frames it as a system that changes the relationship between the citizen and the state. Compared with more academic treatments, the book is more polemical and agenda-driven, but that is also part of its identity. Readers looking for a concise, partisan, and historically grounded defense of free markets and limited government will find it distinctive within the category of political books about socialism. If you would like to support Rand Paul, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.